Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a bit of a somber edition of the Falcoholic Postgame Podcast. I am your quite upset host, Corey Woodruff. Sorry, I'm not in my usually chipper mood. I'm a bit peeved because the Falcons lost a very winnable game today, even with everything that had been going on. Some of it was out of their control, some of it was in their control, some of it was just crummy Falcons luck, but we'll get through it like we always do. The team's at 1-3, things aren't looking great, but hey, at least we've got a podcast for you to get you through the blues. I'm joined, of course, by no stranger to you guys. He's a Falcoholic writer and podcaster. His name is Alan Sturt. Alan, welcome to the conversation. So sorry, we have to center it on these events.
Yeah, another close defeat. Exceptional offensive performances are being wasted, and it's just very confusing what's going on right now because everyone wants to compare this defense to some of the defenses at the end of Mike Smith's tenure and then the beginning of Dan Quinn's tenure, and I just don't remember them being this overmatched. Oh, 2014, they were definitely overmatched, but this one's just like one of the most startling statistics I saw was that halftime was that Bengals only had to convert 3 third downs. They obviously converted all 3 because the Falcons' defense is hopeless, but the Falcons had to convert 7 out of 8. And just the fact that they were struggling to even get the Bengals on third downs just tells a story of how this defense, there's just nothing there right now between the coverage breakdowns. And you can't even really complain about the lack of pass rush because I thought the pass rush really came on the second half. It's just the amount of coverage breakdowns and just silly penalties. I believe the Falcons have more than 10 penalties. And anytime you have more than 10 penalties, you're kind of asking for it.
Yeah, it was a bad day. And I think that this is the Rico effect. The secondary had been pretty good all season. I mean, the way that teams were getting yardage on the Falcons was coming through the middle of the field. I mean, they were really doing a nice job by and large, and kind of locking that secondary down the best that they could. But this is the Rico effect. This is what happens when you lose your quarterback of the defense that kind of helps control a lot of that secondary coverage and the way that guys go cover, and a lot of that communication was just vapid. That they kind of gave that over to DeMonte Casey. This was the first game where Devondre Campbell had the green dot on his helmet. Like Quinn had said, they lean on him a lot to help maneuver some of that communication. And, of course, he's the most able right now, considering he's the most tenured. But you had two new guys running the communication efforts. And I thought that the front seven really was not terrible today. I mean, the Bengals were getting their yardage through big plays in the secondary. Trufant and Alford obviously had two of the worst games either of those guys have had in a very long time. And I think that is because they were missing that communication that Rico would give them. Those guys were able to really thrive when they had that free safety who was helping call the coverages, helping kind of get them in the perfect position to where their talent could come over and make big plays. And when Rico's not back there and he's not able to do that, it completely throws everything off a loop. And you're already missing Deion Jones. You're already missing Keanu Neal. But then you take away the brain of your defense, and of course they look stupid. I mean, they were embarrassed in that first half. That's one of the worst defensive halves I've seen the Falcons put forth in years. I mean, it was sincerely – they were a sieve. They really could not get a stop in any way, shape, or form. They're lucky that the Bengals didn't score more, and this was actually a winnable game there at the end. But it was a bad day for the defense. I feel like we can talk about the offense and talk about all the good that's there right now. They had some holding calls that hurt, obviously, when they had to take the field goal at the end of the game. That was very costly. That they were not able, when they had to get a field goal after blocking a punt, that was very costly. But again, the red zone offense had been so sharp, they're not leaving any points off the board in terms of just getting them in general. Obviously, you want to convert more of those touchdowns today, but this is football. You're not going to get every single red zone opportunity you want as a touchdown. And the fact that we went from week one having them be so porous in terms of getting anything in the red zone to coming now to where we're getting angry with field goals, I think is a huge step. So let's talk about the offense first. I want to keep it as positive as we can until we have to go off the rails and talk about the bad stuff, which is there. What did you see from this offense today that allowed them to be so successful against what I think is a pretty good Cincinnati Bengals defense?
495 total yards. That's this first set that just jumps off. Everyone talks about yards per play and just third down. And by the way, 11 for 15 on third down as well. Yeah, they were 100% in the red zone, 3 for 5, okay, it's totally understandable. A couple blunders with in terms of pass pressure, but defensive line with the likes of Geno Atkins, Carlos Dunlap, Carl Lawson, they're going to get their pressure. And I thought the Falcons' line actually held up. Running game was a little bit shoddy, but they still had their fair share of decent gains. I thought Ito Smith once again showing off that incredible footwork and elusiveness to break open a few plays. But once again, Matt Ryan just really sharp. Other than one that could have been a potential pick six, kind of got a little careless there, but everything else was just spot on. I thought a couple of throws to Ridley were fantastic. He had it good to see Mohamed Sanu get more involved with the offense. He's kind of had a subdued start this season. There was one deep crosser he hit at Sanu, which I thought was fantastic. Just a great throw. Because I remember Ryan took a big shot on that play. You can just tell they're really confident when it comes to play action. Ryan just continues to look downfield when operating, when they use play action, whether it's through two tight end sets. They use a lot more two tight end sets in this game, and they had success. You saw with the Logan Paulson touchdown. So I think the offense is just thriving. Sarkisian's really using all his weapons, especially when they use those 5 wide receiver sets, and they spread everyone out, and it just creates mismatches all over the field. So once again, the offense just – they're really playing at a top-5 level right now. Other than the Chiefs and Rams, I can't really think of any other offenses that are – just playing at a more consistent level, yet they just continues to be wasted. It's really unfortunate because after all the talk of Matt Ryan potentially declining, his arm strength, velocity, it looks like it's diminishing, that all that ridiculous talk after week 1 in the game where, look, it was like 85 degrees on Thursday night, just had a thunderstorm. Just, I thought it was really far-fetched to just discount all what Matt Ryan's done, and it's the fact that last 3 weeks I think he's been playing MVP level. Other than the likes of Mahomes, Goff, and maybe Drew Brees, he's been the best quarterback in the league. And just to see these points get wasted, it has to be demoralizing, because this Falcons team is clearly really talented. It's the reason why they were a kind of a trendy Super Bowl pick. And even though with all the injuries, that no one could really put Super Bowl expectation on them, you still expect them to win at home and be competitive. Oh, they were obviously competitive, but you just expect them to finish out games, and for them not to do that. And some people be like, all right, they should have scored a touchdown on the last drive, but look, he scored 36 points. How much more can ask them? Do they need to score 40 points every week? Is this what it's come down to? It's ridiculous, the fact that anyone can play playing on the offense.
Yeah, I think when you look at what the offense is doing so well, I mean, again, this was a day where in the past Atlanta struggles against these types of teams with the Bengals that are so physical up front. And again, the offensive line struggled at times today, but then the play calling took over. Sarkisian said, okay, we may not be as threatening today if we're going to be passing it every down, so let me get the run game going, okay? He really did a nice job scheming against what this Bengals defense was good at and what they weren't great at. And I think that's such a growing point for him to be able to put together a game like this against a team that matches up really well with what Atlanta tries to do. I think when you talk about, you know, the scoring and this and that, no offense is going to be as efficient as what Atlanta was today. Atlanta was about as efficient on the offense as you can possibly be in a situation like this. Obviously, there were a couple of times where obviously you want a touchdown instead of a field goal. I think the biggest glaring one is when you get down to the 15. The holding penalties hurt today, but then again, you know, if they wipe away some of those penalties and they play a bit cleaner ball, you might be looking at one or two more sacks that are let up. So, you know, there's just times where a guy gets overpowered and has to do what he has to do and hope he doesn't get caught. So it's not ideal to have this kind of an offense and have this kind of a defense. And again, if Atlanta had a full-strength defense and was running this kind of an offense, they would be one of the de facto best teams in the NFL. I mean, there would really be a difficult out every single week. But, you know, even if the pass rush is doing what it's done earlier in the year, I still think that they might be – well, you know, I don't want to say 4-0 because that Philly game is probably still going to be lost. But they would probably be about 3-1 right now if they were at even strength. And maybe even 4 if Keanu had stayed in that Philly game. But, you know, this is the difficult part when you have so many injuries. And I think, you know, obviously Calvin Ridley has been outstanding. Ito Smith has looked really good. Mohamed Sanu had a huge game today. Julio looks really good this year. Matt's playing at an MVP level. The offensive line is doing enough. It's looking good. It's getting the run game going when it can. And when they need to pass, they pass. And they're getting good pass protection when they need to be able to get those downs done. And I know they took up a few sacks today, but the Bengals have one of the best pass rushes in the NFL. I mean, this is an outstanding front four. Cincinnati's always really worked hard to be able to build these front fours up. So that just happens when you play a team like this. But again, like, they're averaging about 35 points a game over the last 3 weeks. And when you lose those games and you're doing that much offensively, I mean, it's not hard to say what the problem is. I mean, obviously right now this defense is dreadful. I mean, this is a, even when they finally got going there in the second half a little bit, they just collapsed at the end and let Andy Dalton just have his way. And, you know, and again, it was just this is the communication. This defense is completely unorganized and it is a complete mess right now. And you have to chalk that up to the complete and utter lack of communication, and just it's the Rico effect. And I think when you don't have Debo, you don't have Rico, you don't have Keanu, they look like right now those might be the three most important players of your defense, because they were the guys that were maintaining so much of what Atlanta wanted to do with its mentality and its communication. This was going to be a smart defense because Rico is so smart, Debo is so smart. They would be able to, you know, call those coverages out and probably help cover up a little bit early some of the deficiencies we saw in the pass rush. So, I mean, this is a nightmarish situation for Atlanta. I know it's not unique to us to have to deal with these just unbelievable circumstances, but the only way I know how to say it right now with this defense is this is just a complete catastrophe. I mean, this is a – even when they can make plays, they still let up a one-point game. And there's another thing I think contributed to that, which they can fix and they're going to have to fix. But, Alan, where is this defense right now? I mean, is it really is it going to get better with just more time and more patience? Or right now, is it just a unit that is, you know, I hate to use this phrase, but a dumpster fire?
We're going to take week by week with the matches, because I know, not to totally look ahead to Pittsburgh, but Pittsburgh does have arguably the best offense in the league, so I do expect the pass rush to stumble a bit, or at least regress, if they can't regress. But I'm really concerned about the secondary, because we saw Trufant. I thought Tyler Boyd got the best of him on a lot of occasions. Robert Alford, you expect him to take his lumps against A.J. Green, but at the same time, his containment on certain runs, he was off once again. Like that touchdown with Gio Bernard, just totally got wrong-footed, and he just not making open field tackles. But another player, I thought Brian Poole once again, just dreadful out there, missing tackles, leaning with his head. There was one play, I think it was Gio Bernard or maybe someone else. There was a spin move where he just totally missed. It's just like, this guy just allergic to spin moves, because he really, like, I understand that some players are just too shifty, but this time with Poole, he's been one of the most consistent open field tacklers on the team. Like, I remember that Rams game last year, and he was just on point. He brought down Gurley every time he met him in the open field, and now he looks like a liability out there. And you just saw, because you mentioned what Ricardo Allen, just, I think two touchdowns were, the one to Eifert and then the one to John Ross, right down the seam, and both touchdowns show players were like communicating right before it was snapped. It just shows, like, oh, for Carl Allen was there, those issues could have been mitigated. And yeah, I do think obviously Jones and Neal are the top two most valuable players, and then you could debate between maybe Grady Jarrett or Carl Allen, but Carl Allen has to be up there just for his leadership and just his ability to organize, because we've both been in the Falcons locker room, we've talked to players, and you understand the command of respect that Ricardo Allen gets, if people know why they go to him for advice, because this guy he's obsessed with film. Like, I know through talking to him, he just always watches film. He knows where spots are. He understands how demanding this role is within Dan Quinn's defense. This is, quote-unquote, the Earl Thomas role, where you have to defend a lot of space downfield and you have to make sure you're positionally right. And there's times where he's going to have to make that key open field tackle to prevent a touchdown, because the Falcons front seven's undersized. So, yeah, you could have to make the argument he's right up there with, like, Grady Jarrett, the third most valuable defensive player. But it's just, I want to see the secondary improve, because I wrote about it in my preview, and just the fact that they were just time and time again they got beat, and it just has to be very concerning. And it's not just also the penalties. I think Alford and Trufant had at least two penalties, and Trufant just had a ridiculous personal foul as well. And just, you expect players that are essentially veterans at this point, they were drafted in 2013, to at least play in a disciplined manner, and they're just shooting the team in the foot time and time again.
These were huge, and you know, I saw someone on Twitter, maybe in DW, but like, when guys get frustrated, this is what happens. Maybe Kevin, if somebody from the Falcoholics said that. When guys get stupid penalties up, I remember last year in that Dolphins game when they obviously blew. I remember Grady had that really dumb penalty, and it was just like, how in the world can such a good player make such a dumb decision? And it's like, Trufant, great corner, dumb penalty. But that's just what happens when guys get fresh at a high speed. Things are not going well, and you have to hope that guys would more opt to just stomp on the ground or, you know, just yell something, you know, that's not, you know, offensive to a ref would hear. But, like, I don't know what you're supposed to do right now with so many injuries, such little communication. I think when you saw guys like Trufant and Alford doing what they were doing today, Poole's issues especially, when they don't have that communication, they're forced to have to use the same, like, and again, Dan Quinn's defense relies so heavily on there just being a couple of guys who are able to hold it down from a mental standpoint, because everybody else is just sent to go attack and hit. It's a defense that doesn't, that Seattle scheme doesn't want guys to have to think too hard. And I think that's what happened today, is that those guys just did not have that communication, and everyone's having to overthink, and they're overplaying. They're making dumb mistakes. They're missing tackles. They're letting busted coverages happen because they're trying to have to do too much at one time. And that's not hard. That's not easy to do. And again, that's where I guess, you know, if you really feel like this has to be the year, you say maybe go get old Thomas. Maybe just bite your tongue and let go those draft picks. But then again, with the deal that Rico has signed, there's no room for old Thomas in the future unless they want to get rid of Ricardo Allen, which would just be awful considering the deal they just gave him. I mean, there's really no, or unless you just want to have the de facto best safety trio in the league, like, and just pay top dollar for it every week. There's no room for Earl right now. There's no room for Earl in the future. And with the way the season is going, they're not guaranteed anything. So they're probably not going to make that kind of investment in a guy that may not even be here past next spring. So I know this is frustrating, but right now the defense is broken and there's no easy fixes. The only fix right now is that these guys are going to have to get more accustomed to playing fast and physical and smart, because especially last year, they were able to succeed because they had their communicators in place that were telling them what to do, and they could just go make the play. It's easier to do that on the edge when your job is very singularly to get the quarterback. Tack did that today. He had 3 sacks coming off that groin injury. His ceiling is sky high. He's the best pass rusher they have right now. He's got, I believe, 5 sacks on the season at this point. So right now he's looking at a double-digit sack season, which is just exciting and incredible for him as a young player. But, you know, Vic Beasley came on a bit more today than he probably had his best game as a Falcon this season so far, which was very encouraging, because they're going to need Vic to do that to really justify giving him that 5th extension next year and taking up that much cap space. I don't exactly know. You know, everybody wants a fix. Everybody wants to see something with this defense right now that's fixable. But I just don't know if there's any easy fixes that are reasonable for what the Falcons are trying to do, that don't try to really hamstring them in the future to, you know, make the moves they need to be long-term successful. And giving up 2 second-round picks for Earl Thomas, to me, is a very short-sighted move that might help stabilize things for now. But then when you get into the future and you're not having those draft picks, and then you have to let Earl go because Rico's healthy now and you can't afford him, it would be an unwise rental. And maybe it might give the Falcons 2 or 3 extra wins. But, like, right now, even if you get Earl Thomas, is this team – they're not playoff material. The offense is, but this defense, even worth Earl Thomas, would not be playoff material.
It's not even going to happen, though. Falcons, I don't see them being that drastic. If they were – really looking to make an outside move, they would have immediately went to go sign Eric Reed. I know that sounds kind of like hindsight 2020, but if they were really looking outside, they would have saw Eric Reed and they would have made the move, because the fact that they already kind of gave up on Jordan Richards and not playing the last snaps, it shows that they're not content with trying to add a safety on their roster, a strong safety that is on their roster. Like, you could tell that, okay, Richards kind of been a liability, can't rely on him. We'll try out Poole because at least he's kind of a heavy hitter and he's has experience within the defense, but clearly he looks like a liability out there. So to me, the fact that they didn't go out for Eric Reed kind of shows that they're not going to take that risk. And I don't think they really should look for Earl Thomas, because I don't think just the draft capital, it's not necessary, because this team's clearly not good enough. Like, Earl Thomas, yeah, one of the best free safeties in the league, covers so much ground. He's clearly a difference maker. Like Earl Thomas is a phenomenal player, but just to give up all that draft capital, especially after also giving Rekord Allen that deal, I don't see the value in it because it's like, all right, maybe they'll go 10-6 or 9-7, but right now this defense, they just need to keep developing players. I think Casey is a pretty good player. I do think he needs to play more controlled, really fortunate not to get penalized. He was headhunting a lot in this game, and it's just something that he hasn't really learned from, and you have to think he has to learn at some point because it was funny. Going to third quarter, they showed a commercial of Dan Quinn talking about how the league's taking the right steps in terms of safety protocol when it comes to tackling. It's just like you watch his team play. Like they're missing tackles left and right. People are headhunting. Flags are everywhere. It's just like, oh, man, you would hope. Dan Quinn, I still think, is a very good coach. You tell players to play for him. He's changed everything about Atlanta. Like, I fully believe in Dan Quinn still. I'm not going to really get after him for what's happened because there have been a lot of personnel losses, but it's just I don't see the value in training for Earl Thomas because this team, they need to start looking within even how much they've struggled, especially in coverage, because these cornerbacks got to start making plays because I talked about it last week. Drew Brees, 49 pass attempts, they only broke up one pass, and that was off Brian Poole in overtime. It was like a deep crosser of Benjamin Watson. And they did break up a few more passes in this game, but it's just in man coverage, you expect the players like some true fun offer to be more active and not being penalized as much, and they were penalized a lot.
Yeah, the penalties were pretty bad, and I think the offensive line did struggle with that a lot. The holds were not ideal, but most of the time they were able to overcome that to at least get 3 points. There's one thing I do really want to talk about right now, which I think is going to be the firmest I've been on this individual probably since he's been here. As much as I love the guy, I'm a huge fan of him. Dan Quinn is not a good situational football coach.
That is accurate.
He has struggled with that through his entire time here. And that decision to go for two today and not just take the points, I thought was I get it. I know hindsight's 20/20, but I really feel like, you know, and there were times where they went for it on fourth down in the drive, especially early in the game when they really had a nice drive going and they didn't just get the Bengals further down the field. I know that in the first half it may not have made a huge difference, but when the Bengals had that drive where it put them right at the 50-yard line, the defense gets a short break. I think that these were just decisions where Quinn gets way too aggressive and he needs to be smarter to just step back and not be so worried with having to make the statement play then and there. I think it's a bit nerves. I think he gets a little bit nervous. Like, well, I don't think he wants to put the game in his defense's hand right now. And I think he's putting way too much on the offense. And again, I think that's what happened in the Super Bowl. I hate to bring it up, but they were afraid to put the game in the defense's hands. He and Shanahan wanted to go for that kill on that play, and they didn't get it. And obviously a lot happened in that. We don't need to unpack anytime soon. But, like, today I thought his situational coaching was very poor. The coverages that they're running on defense when teams are going on these long stretches, it's not working. Running the deep zone is just not doing them any favors. And I know in this situation, do you want to feel like prevent is the best option for you? But what they're doing right now is they're just bleeding yards, bleeding time, and preventing their offense a chance to try to pull them out of the situation. But I don't know if Quinn needs to bring somebody in and he needs just somebody who's just an older coach who is really good at situational football. The Rams have Jed Fish right now, and that's somebody that Atlanta was looking at for the quarterback coach's job. You know, I think I think Quinn's a great coach. Don't get me wrong. Like, I don't want to be overtly critical of a guy who is probably single-handedly responsible for getting us to this moment where we can be this disappointed with a team that's underperforming. He's a completely different coach than Mike Smith was. He's wonderful at talent evaluation and development. He's gotten them, you know, two really good winning seasons and three seasons. I know this year doesn't look great, but that's not really his fault because, you know, he doesn't go out and injure the guys or anything. But no, I think right now his deficiencies as a situational coach are beginning to show a lot more because the defense is laying up so many yards and because that they're, you know, in such a difficult spot with the roster. And it's causing them to make some of these mistakes in the past that were much more forgivable, stand out more and come with more criticism, I think.
By the way, what did you make of the fourth down call in the first quarter.
I was not a fan. I really feel like they should have punted. I know you want to play aggressive, but it showed disrespect to Cincinnati's defense. And I think that defense registered that very clearly, that they were not going to get the benefit of the down. They were the worst third down defense coming into today. And I think that's why Dan Quinn did it. It was because, look, I don't really – I think we can get this. We're very effective at this, and I think we're going to get it. And Cincinnati said, no, you're not. And I think that tone carried for the rest of the day. And, again, that led up getting Cincinnati right there in the middle of the field, and they got a touchdown out of it. So I think it was a bizarrely not good move early that, you know, cost them a lot.
It was fourth and five at the Cincinnati 44. I'm just like, that's kind of excessive, especially second drive of the game, and defense completely looks overmatched. Like, hit them deep and just hope you don't allow a 90-yard drive. I know that's a bit ridiculous. I know it's a bit hindsight, whatever, but it's just, I don't know. Like, that was a little sketchy. And of course, Geno Atkins doing Geno Atkins things. That was made one little blunder. But no, I thought pass pressure held up from us. I didn't think Ryan took a lot of hits despite getting sacked three times. So I think those sacks came at the worst possible times. There was one where Matthews got beat inside. I think it was like second goal. And then the other one was obviously the fourth down, Geno Atkins. So I thought they held up well. It's just, there's no short-term solutions. There really isn't. When defense allows 43 and 37 points, is clear issues, and it's not the usual culprits. Like, I think Duke Riley's actually played quite well over the past 2 weeks. He hasn't been out of his depth, at least. And then you have the pass rushers, guys like Beasley, and I thought Jack Crawford showed some flashes as well. Like these guys, they're coming on after being kind of like culprits over the past couple weeks, where it's like, oh, they're not performing. But, you know, these guys are going at it. It's the usual players that you consider consistent playmakers, well, maybe not playmakers, but just players that you expect them to be in position and not get beat times I am. Like, I really thought the cornerbacks were largely responsible for it, defeat, just being out of position time and time again. And you could also say, of course, the safeties as well, because it's just, I don't know what they could do with Sean Safety at this point, because I really thought Brian Poole was the worst player on the field. Like, he made mistakes time and time again, and it's not his coverage ability that makes him so effective. It's just the fact that he's such a good tackler and usually positionally sound. Like, he's very good in zone and not so much a man-to-man. But now it's just, I don't know how much they're relying on him. And then we saw Jordan Richards a couple of weeks where he's missing tackles and he's out of position. So they have a lot of decisions to make on their hands. And who knows, maybe they got to play Keith Tandy, the special teams hero.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe that could be a solution. Because it's weird. They put Kamal Ishmael as backup safety. But I swear, Kamal Ishmael is like 235 pounds. Like, he bulked up to be a linebacker.
He's not built to play that role anymore.
Yeah, like people are saying, oh, Kamal Ishmael, he could fill in safety. I'm like, no, they asked him to put on weight so he could play linebacker. Like, what do you think? You expect the guy his size to run 20 yards downfield effectively? It's just like, it's not happening. So, no, I don't think there's any short-term solutions. And just the defense, they got to decrease in terms of the mistakes they've made. They have to limit those. And so pass rush continues to steadily improve. And guys like Trufant Alford have to play better, because I couldn't believe how many times they were either beaten in coverage or just committing unnecessary penalties.
I think one thing we take for granted sometimes is that we look at the player's individual performance and we don't really take into account what other guys are doing around them to put them in that position. And I think that's what happened today, is that Ricardo Allen really, I think, has been for a long time the most underrated Falcon on that roster, because he was making other guys better around him by the way he was allowing them to just go. And he was taking care of a lot of that thinking for, you know, a lot of the guys on the roster. And it's not to say nobody, you know, that they're dumb players or they're smart guys, but when you're having to play so fast and having to play in a scheme that really calls for you just to go make the play, you don't have a lot of time to really dwell on it. And when you have a guy that has made a career for that and putting you in the proper position at the same time of being a guy who also makes plays, I mean, that's tough. You don't just get over that overnight. I really felt like into this game, the communication was going to be dreadful. And again, Atlanta could have won this game if they had done a couple of things differently. But at the same time, I don't know if this one really would have been more than just a win for a win. I mean, you feel better and you have a happy afternoon and you have a victory Monday, but this team is showing right now that they're not ready to go to the playoffs. They're not a team that is built to contend with some of these other NFC you know, guys. And again, I know that if it gets down to the wire and Deion Jones is healthy and he's back and this offense is still playing well and the defense is beginning to look better, you might feel, oh man, maybe if they can just get that wild card spot, they can go on a run. But you can't take that for granted. I mean, right now, I know teams are not – again, the Falcons were much different to begin the year than they were when they ended the year. This has always typically been, under Quinn, a team that finishes strong in December. So I know that this right now, it's just frustrating not to get some of these really close early wins and just say, all right, let's just get a win here and we'll be better tomorrow. But you're not guaranteed tomorrow. Grady Jarrett's hurt. I mean, he's got an ankle injury now. He wasn't able to play in that last drive. Tack McKinley wasn't on the field a lot for that last drive, which I thought was a – incredibly bizarre thing, unless he was hurting.
Yeah, way too much Steven Means on that last drive.
Yeah. I mean, no offense to Steven Means. I think he'll actually end up being a good reserve for him, but, like, no, you can't rely on a guy like that to be able to make that game-winning play. But, again, we have to finally say that, like, Atlanta keeps putting themselves in these positions. And this is what happened last year. They had games last year, particularly in September, where they were able to win at the last second. You had the Chicago game. You had the Detroit game. They were two plays last year from starting 0-3. This year, they're seeing that when you have a side of your ball that is just not getting the job done and these games go to the last second, sometimes you're going to win, sometimes you're going to lose. And this year, the coin's falling on tails, literally. I mean, looking at that New Orleans game, like – they're not getting it going their way, and it's because they're not playing complete football on both sides of the ball. Last year, the offense was struggling, and the defense was having to pick up some of that slack. This year, the defense is struggling, and the offense is having to pick up a lot of that slack, but they're just not being able to make that killer moment to just kind of tip the scale in their favor. In 2016, obviously, they were just blowing teams out every single week. It was a historic offense. They were able to survive not having a defense right until, like, late November. But this year, it's like it's a really good offense. Don't get me wrong. And they're scoring the same numbers that 16 offense did. But this is a much worse defense because they don't have any communication. At least that 16 off defense, it had communication. It just had a lot of youth and a lot of just
bad. They also had playmakers as well. Like Beasley was doing his thing. Yeah. Deion came on at the end. And I thought Keanu Neal was really good in his rookie year. And Grady also had a – and Alford as well. Like they had playmakers 2016.
Oh, yeah. Claiborne, Dwight Freeney.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Claiborne. Claiborne did eventually get injured, but yeah. Claiborne made some big plays. But it's just that's why people are talking about all the lost that defense. But it's just like they still got talent. You still have Beasley, McKinley, Jarrett. Like that's still good enough talent, defensive line to survive. It's like we've been raving about Trufant Alford for years. Like, why are they slipping? Okay, the linebacker core, not ideal. Safeties, obviously, the backups, but there's still enough capable talent to the point where they could allow maybe 24 to 30 points a game. Just for them to allow 43 and 37 and just waste two just phenomenal performances from Matt Ryan, it's unbelievable. And that's why the fans have every right to be furious and not to use the injuries as a crutch. Of course, look, injuries you have to take into account because they are like these are valuable players that are lost. But it's just you can't accept, oh, this is why points are being allowed at this astronomical rate. Because what happens if Pittsburgh scores 50 points next week? We're still going to be bringing up injuries? It's like, no, at some point, players have to step up. People have to make tackles. Penalties have to be avoided. And you hope maybe they could create a few turnovers like they did. Well, Casey obviously had a turnover, and Beasley almost had the strip sack. It's just at this point, talent has to step up. There's no, because you're 1-3. You're just going to continue this as a crutch. Like it's just that you got to have that mindset at this point, at least as a player. But as someone that's looking from the outside in, whether you're a writer or you're a fan or whoever that may be, it's just allowing this many points and yards and not even putting teams in third down situations. It's embarrassing.
It's not good. It's really bad. And I think the coaching is not where it needs to be right now defensively. I think Marquand Manuel and his staff are going to have to take much more focus on looking at why there are so many communication breakdowns and finding better ways to get – and again, when they move the green dot to Devondre's helmet, I think that shows that they're trying things. Mm-hmm. But right now, they just don't have a lot of options, right? I mean, like – unless they're going to go trade for Earl Thomas or, you know, go make some big home run move to try to salvage the defense this year, they're relying on a bunch of guys that are just going to have to learn. And this is just going to be a really ugly period of growing pains for a lot of these guys that are having to take responsibilities they didn't think they were going to have to worry about when the year started. Mm-hmm. It's communication to me. You just have to look at the fact that it's just you have to – I think that's just like – that's why a lot of these guys that are so talented are not performing where they normally are. And it's just like – it's because they're out of position. They're not – they don't know what they're doing in a sense where they normally are comfortable with other guys telling them in a way what they need to do. And that's just going to take time. That's just going to take stirring the, you know, the milk and till it comes to butter. I mean, that's just the grunt work. And there's nothing they can do right now, I think, to make that any better than it already is.
Though the touch on Eifert and touch on the Ross could have been more evident about the struggles without Rekor Island. Those two plays, you just tell. Like, I'm not afraid of the Ross touching. You saw Oliver and Trufant literally talking as they were getting into the position to cover. Like, they still didn't know what exactly to do defensively. Like, what was the actual coverage being played? And on the Eifert touchdown, it was just I think there was a pool kind of slipped and offered. They just weren't communicating probably. But, yeah, Rekor Island, he's such an underrated piece. And I mean, 2016, you saw him several times making touchdown save tackle. Then last year, you just saw the way he was organizing players, whether it was at the line scrimmage or back 15, 20 yards. It's crucial. And I just don't know what they could do. Like, Casey, as talented as he is, and it's a big task for him because a player that was originally drafted as a quarterback, now you're expecting him to be an organizer. It's tough for him. So they're just going to have to ride this out. It's not much more else you could say, and just hope that they could eventually cut go from 37 to 43 to about 27 to 30. Because look, this offense clearly showed they're capable of scoring 30 points every game, and I don't think Pittsburgh's gonna stop them. Sure as hell, Tampa Bay's not stopping them. Like, you don't want to talk about upcoming opponents. The Giants don't think they're gonna stop them. Like, this offense is gonna keep thriving. They're gonna average at this rate more than 30 points per game. Like, I'm really confident what they're doing. Here. And let's not forget, they're going to get Devontae Freeman back lately next week. And say what you want about Devontae Freeman, that man's a difference maker. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. I don't care if he's overpaid or not. However you feel about Devontae Freeman, will make plays. So it's just at this point, the defense, if they're going to make something out of the season, they got to limit teams to scoring whatever 27, 30 points game, because this offense showed they're capable of winning shootouts. Now it's just the point where 3 to 4 plays per game, make those plays, limit those penalties, and whatever blunder, one or two mistakes, whether it's the pass protection or Sarkisian, like against New Orleans, a little conservative, those plays shouldn't determine the game. Like, yeah, it played a difference, but don't let it be the matter of, like, don't let it be like an ultimate difference maker, because I'll admit it did hurt last week for the Falcons that they kind of blew in that first half drive. But if Brian Poole doesn't let Drew Brees pull spin move on him, maybe we're not talking about as much, or up there a couple other coverage breakdowns, but. I think it all falls on defense.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I mean, right now it's just they have a side of a ball that's basically a sieve for sections of a game, and it's just not being able to do anything. And when you don't have a side of your ball that's functioning, these weird nights or afternoons where your offense scores unbelievable numbers and you still lose, that happens. But I think when you look ahead to schedule right now, they have to win the next three. They have to go into Pittsburgh and win. They've got to beat the Bucs at home, and they've got to beat the Giants at home. If they lose one of those games and they get that fourth loss before the halfway point, they're not going to the playoffs this year. I know, like, right now, 1-3, it really doesn't look good right now. And if I'm being bluntly honest with you, if I had to guess where this is going, I don't think it's going anywhere overtly fun. I think it's one of those just – you know, mid-tier years where you don't exactly go 4-12, you don't exactly go 12-4, you end up somewhere in the middle. I think 9-7 tends to be the ceiling right now. I think they can get there with this offense, but they can't lose any of these games coming up. They've got to win next week in Pittsburgh. They've got to beat the Buccaneers when they come to town. The Buccaneers look like they're reeling right now. They don't have much of a defense. That offense just got manhandled in Chicago. But obviously they've had success there before. And then the Giants this year they're okay. They're not great. They're not terrible. They're just kind of a mediocre football team. But if they lose one of those games and they notch that fourth loss before November, I'm not saying they can't, but at the same time, they'll be 3-4. They'll go into the bye week, and then they have to go into Washington on November the 4th, which has always been a team that's done pretty well against Atlanta. So I'm not real optimistic that they can do that, because the Pittsburgh's going to be tough, and that's just a hard point in the season to have to play that game because that offense is so good, and obviously they have two of the best, maybe the best one or two punch at receiver right now in the NFL with Antonio Brown and Juju Schuster-Smith. So I don't exactly know how this is going to go. So I don't want to be too doom and gloomy to tell you it's over completely, but it's not good if they lose, if they continue playing like they're playing. We're going to have to see major upticks on this defense, particularly from a communicating standpoint, if they're going to be able to make 2018 a salvageable year. But right now, you know, it's not the hardest schedule from next Sunday's tough, but then they get Buccaneers, Giants, they go to Washington, they go to Cleveland, which Cleveland's not terrible this year, so I know that's a bit different. They get the Cowboys at home. That's a navigable stretch. They could come out maybe with a winning record from that if everything goes the way it does. Like if they could, you know, obviously if they could win the next six, you know, you go to 6-3, and then you're looking at New Orleans and you're kind of looking at that team. You look like the 2016 team at that point, as long as the defense could get going. But they can't afford to lose another game right now. I know that's not a fun thing to you know tell people on a podcast. They can't afford to lose another game.
So, all right, well, I don't know where else to go from here. We look at the future, but right now, just obviously one game at a time. That's all you can really look at this point because there's no short-term solutions. They just, at this point with these close losses, because every loss now has been a one-possession game. They haven't been soundly defeated. So you just have to hope offense keeps firing on all cylinders. Matt Ryan keeps playing MVP level. And defense just somehow, whether it's creating more pressure, forcing more turnovers, just somehow getting off the field on third down. Because I know before this game, they were second worst in the league on third down percentage. They were allowing 40% third downs being converted. Roughly Cincinnati was the worst at 52%. So saw some terrible defense out there today. But things need to get better there. Because otherwise, this team, they just every week is going to be struggles like this where we're going to be looking at a couple of plays where it's like, oh, this could be decided there. When in reality, you should be talking about wins. Like the Falcons should have gone off the field on one of those fourth downs. And against the Saints, the Falcons should have wrapped up Drew Brees before he spin moves, went to end zone or whatever that may be. So it's just a couple of plays. That's where you look at it. I think I just saw a quote from Dan Quinn say, record may not indicate, but we are a good team. And I do think the Falcons are a good team, but if you don't finish, then none of this really matters. You're going to be watching football in January, and a team as good as the Falcons and a coach like Dan Quinn, team that's well-equipped that should be playing in January, it's not going to be the case. You're not going to be playing in January.
It'd be tough, I think, with the way the roster is and even with the injuries to have to sit out at least from a wild card round because it's like you've got a bunch of guys playing in their prime. Time is the ultimate, you know, evener in terms of making sure that guys will end when they end and you don't like burning these years. But this is the NFL. You're not guaranteed anything. Nobody gets to automatically keep up what they're doing every single year. And right now Atlanta's just in a bog because they are, you know, they got caught with the injury bug and it just happened. I mean, I wish there was a way we could kind of trace this back. We could last year with some struggles, but this year it just happened because guys aren't out. They're not dressed. They're on injured reserve. And I think this is just one of those years where you have to take that into account with however you crack things out because it's the injuries. But again, you're right. They can't use that all season. There has to be a point where they make some decision that at least helps salvage things to a decent amount. But, you know, that's football. If they do, they do. They don't, they don't. And, you know, this will be a good team for the next few years, I still believe. 2019 could be really fun if they can just stay healthy.
Oof. All right, let's not talk about 2019. Yeah. It's September still. Oh, another day will be October, but come on, we're talking about September right now. So let's not look too into the future for now. Watch the film, see what happens. At least Dan Quinn should obviously watch the film, but
yeah,
and then we'll look, see what happens in October. But yeah, it just like I saw Kobe mentioned, you get the draft inside. First of all, I hate the whole draft process in general, so I'm not wanting to think about the draft. It's just it'll take a week by time. This team, regardless of what the record may be, it's still gonna be a lot of entertaining football. Like, you can't discount that the Falcons are really a fun team. The offense is exploding, and Steve Sarkisian, for all the criticisms he got, he looks like somebody that should be coaching here, at least going to 2019. We'll see where it happens going forward, but it's good to see Matt Ryan back where he belongs. He's a top-tier quarterback, and he deserves that respect. And with all the weapons there, it's been fun to watch. But they just got to start finishing. Simple as that. That's probably where you got to leave it, because a couple plays here, a couple plays there. It sounds formulaic to say that, but it really comes down to it. When you look at a 2-point loss here, 5-point loss here, then what happened in overtime against New Orleans. It's just, I think one thing, if anything, that gets people out of it is just the fact they've lost 2 out of 3 at home. This is a team that was so good at home. Remember the Mike Smith years? They were just always 6-2 or even 7-1 at home. Now already 2 home losses, and they probably have a couple more tough home games coming up. I don't know who comes to mind, but there's always challenges. So,
yeah, and again, this team is always, I will say this, and I think we'll end on this note. They always seem to lose about like 3 or 4 games in the first half of the year under Quinn. They always seem to do that. They always hit that point in November where they just skyrocket. Maybe that's where we go this year. But at the same time, like, they've already lost the three games that they typically lose in the first half of the year, which makes October so vital to just sweep. They need to be perfect in October. And traditionally under Quinn, they haven't been. So that may be right now where the season is won and lost, because typically under Quinn, they make enough in September to where they can go about, 3-1 or 4-0. Like, they've been really, and now they've gone 1-3. It's a really tough position, but maybe that means October will turn out well. But things aren't over. It's not the end. If you're thinking about 19, I don't blame you. I've done that a little bit, but again, they can't lose anymore. And right now they have used up all the losses they can use in the first half of the year if they want to be serious about January. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be an uphill climb, but, we've seen them do harder, I guess. This is the Falcons. Anything is possible at any moment. So just try to keep your head up a little longer. But, if they lose next week, I don't blame you for, taking it for what it is. Alan, thanks for coming on, my man. Let everybody know where they can find you and all that good stuff.
Alan_Sterk, that's Allen_Sterk.
And you can find me on Twitter at CoreyWoodruff47. Be sure to subscribe to us on all the ways that we have to describe on podcasts, and leave us a review in any of those formats. Let us know how you enjoy the shows. Of course, we've got lots of other great audio content you can see, particularly the Falcoholic podcast with Gina and DW. Always recommend checking that out as well. Some of the newer things we're introducing to you with our new podcast channel. But thank you guys for listening so much. I know this is a bit of a unfortunate detour from where we thought we were going to be at the end of September about a month ago, but that's football. We get no guarantees. We get the Falcons, and this is what the Falcons typically do. So at least they're consistent, I would say. Thank you guys for listening so much. We'll be back next week. I'll be in Pittsburgh. I believe Alan might be joining me. So we'll both be up there talking about what we see from Heinz Field, and hopefully we'll be talking about a win. I think we could all go for one of those right now in terms of Falcons football. So thank you so much for listening.
Quick thing for the listeners. If anyone knows of hotel advice in Pittsburgh, you could tweet me at Alan_Sterk. Hotels in Pittsburgh, for some reason, are all sold out. So if anyone could help me with advice, greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, seriously. You're
I've never been in this situation, but if anyone has insight, I'm looking for hotel deals. Not even deals. I'll pay for whatever. Just everything's sold out. I don't understand how hotels be sold out a week in advance, but what are you going to do?
If you can advise in Pittsburgh lodging, let Alan know. If you've got that expertise, the Falcoholic post-game podcast niche. All right, guys. Thank you. Yay. Thanks so much for listening. Alan, of course, thanks so much for coming on. And we'll be back next week. This ship keeps sailing no matter what, and I hope to think we're undefeated. So, let's finish out strong, guys. Thanks so much.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seemed Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.